Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So sometimes I got to tell you, I love social media. There's some of those moments where I swear at it and I'm like, you know, this is just all a bunch of garbage and people just yelling at each other. And then there's some moments where you go, this is worth it. And one of those came, on Twitter over the weekend when this 104-year-old New Yorker named Ruth, her video went viral over the weekend of her voting, story of her voting. Because this woman evidently, 104 years old, was born before she had the right to vote. And she said, in this really, this sweet moment of, now I can die happy, which is, just kind of sad. But, just kind of, one of those amazing moments that we've got a guy in the White House who's, doing everything he can do to make sure that people don't get the vote. We've got a Supreme Court who's putting up roadblocks at every opportunity. And here's this 104-year-old woman who, born before she had the right, casting her ballot. It just caught my attention. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on we're ticking down the days. Won't be long now until Election Day. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come back and share some thoughts. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
Great scene. I mean, people are voting. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I fear we got a Supreme Court who's going to throw it all out.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something we have to be concerned about because I don't put it past them to try it. We've certainly seen them do it, right? I mean, my first presidential election that I ever voted in was the 2000 election. And every election I've voted in since has been trying to cleanse, be a brain cleanse and an emotional cleanse for that experience. Being 18 years old and feeling like, okay, this is my first time at it, and not really realizing that it could come down to hanging chads and, 500,000 votes and the Supreme Court deciding in the opposite direction of how I voted.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think this is the first time in what will be, 20 years of voting in Texas elections that I've seen most of the Texans that I know not take this apathetic view of we're going to go red anyway. I don't know if you've noticed, but Texas is ahead of the country in terms of early voting. We've had over 7 million people vote. And it's tremendous to see the turnout from young people in particular. 750,000 people between 18 and 29 have already voted. And that's compared to 100,000 at this point in the early election process in 2016. So I think people are energized. I think people feel like they really do have to vote because their lives depend on it this year. And I think that, we're just going to have to see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary as hell. It's scary as hell waiting to see, these last 8 days just feel like agony.
Yeah, I keep waiting for that, the next thing to hit.
Right.
It's every day you're waiting for the right-wing machine to throw out the next attack.
Exactly.
And it's, it's almost like, you're suffering from PTSD. Every time you turn around, you're looking over your shoulder going, where's the next laptop going to drop out of? What's the next story that they're going to dream up? And then you're going to have an entire, crowd of people chanting. I mean, I was listening to the Trump spiel from Allentown, and they're out there, chanting "lock him up," and I'm going, for what? Did I miss something?
I mean, that's their default at this point.
Yeah.
They want all of their quote unquote enemies to be locked up, strung up. I mean, this is how fervently they feel about this. And there really is, if you really think about it, I mean, he really has nothing to run on at this point except for hatred of his opposition. And I think that's, again, why you see the base going to this extreme right now, because what else do they have? I mean, we're in the middle of this pandemic. The stock market is crashing today. It's not just that what's going to be the next hit job from the Republican Party. It's also what is going to be the next crisis to befall our society.
Right.
And, you know, seeing the numbers get worse and worse and worse for COVID around the country, the hospitalizations going up, the death toll is obviously going to go up. I think that's culminating in this, like, generalized exhaustion people have of being continually traumatized. And I think even if you are a Republican and if you're not that far to the extreme, I think this is a moment where you really are going, this is a disaster. This has been a very stressful last 4 years, and I think people are really tired of being tired and sick of being sick all at the same time. So, you know, of course the base is going to decide the way they decided 4 years ago, but I think for those people who were kind of in the middle on the fence, wanted to see what was going to happen, shaking things up, as they said at that time, well, things are actually really shaken up, and this is the outcome, and this is why we don't have a normal society. It's why our kids aren't in school. It's why we're not taking the vacations we were planning on taking. We're not gathering for the family events and Thanksgiving and the holidays the way we thought we would, and that's all a function of the failed leadership in Washington.
Now, we've lost a year, and like my family, we've lost an entire year.
Yeah.
You know, the thing, as you pointed out, the things that we were going to do, I work, crazy numbers of hours. And, one of the things that I do with the kids is we go away for a weekend, a 3-day long weekend, and whatever they want to do, we go and do that. My oldest daughter, was into basketball. We were going to go see the Sweet 16 women's basketball tournament, as we've done for the last several years. We didn't get to do that this year. My son likes football. We were going to go back up to Buffalo or to Cleveland to spend a weekend and see a game. And, those things didn't happen because, we've been in lockdown. We've been in survival mode.
Right. And, I mean, even as a psychiatrist, I think what is standing out for me more than anything is how people are breaking emotionally. And I think even in these communities, these rural communities, that are so fervently supportive of Trump, they're still falling apart. They still have high addiction rates. They still have high rates of dysfunction because they're out of work. They don't have health care. They're not able to take care of themselves. They don't have their, Maslow's hierarchy of needs taken care of. And so no matter how rah, rah, rah you are at these rallies, the reality when you go back home is still that you're not able to put food on your table. And so I think that's kind of the part that is, I hope, is sinking in for people, that conditions on the ground have not changed.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I started today's show off with a Trump supporter I talked to this week, who came out with the admission that he hasn't seen a raise in his job since 2007.
Wow.
Since before the Bush collapse.
Yeah.
And that his health insurance costs keep going up, his costs keep going up, things are getting harder, he's working longer hours, all of this stuff, kids are doing without, all of the stuff that you would expect with stagnant income and rising costs, this poor guy's going through. Yeah. And, again, it's all the Democrats' fault. It's all, it's all what he's heard from the right-wing machine. And he's bought the cult line. He bought the T-shirt and the hat. So now he's fully, invested in the cult. And yet when you talk to him about healthcare, you say, look, doesn't it make sense to have one giant insurance pool where everybody's in it, where you have the high risk, the low risk, everybody's in. So as any insurer will tell you, the bigger the pool, the lower the risk. Doesn't it make some bit of common sense? And the socialism. And you go, but yeah, okay, never mind.
Right. I mean, that's when it becomes apparent. And I think that's what this moment exposes, is that all of that is a proxy for their underlying bigotry and resentment towards a world that's changing. And ultimately, even when we talk about Obamacare, so much of that was Republican policy. I mean, we don't talk about that as much now because it's like, been fear-mongered as this socialist heist. But, at the time, Democrats, liberals, people on the left side of the spectrum weren't necessarily thrilled with Obamacare because they recognized that it was sort of Republican light in terms of what it was offering on the policy.
And I'll own up to it. I was against the Affordable Care Act at the beginning because it was the Heritage Foundation's answer to Hillary Care. and it did inculcate, you know, private profit into law, and we were never going to get rid of the employer-based system and the profit motives. Now, there were some things in that I did like, so I can defend myself a little bit. They did cap how much profit can be taken out, and had to rebate, you know, certain amounts of money above what they've spent. That's not a bad thing. They did tax rich people to fund some of the things. There's some good things in it. I'm not gonna, you know, water all over it. But for me, from the beginning, it was not the answer. Public option should have been mandatory at the minimum. We didn't get that, though.
Right. And I mean, think about now the prospect of it being gone completely and us returning to the state of affairs that we had before it was ever passed.
Right.
And I think that's the aspect that people take for granted when we get into these various, you know, policy arguments in the course of a primary and when we actually are in control. But when we're out of control, you're really looking at a full-blown disaster. You're looking at rights being clawed back way beyond where we had actually achieved in 2010. And so, I think for this election, we have to not only be thinking about, you know, winning it, but also how are we going to reset the clock? How are we going to actually fix what has been broken? Not just, you know, in the last 4 years, but honestly, what has been broken and never really fixed sufficiently going all the way back to George W. Bush's presidency.
Well, I would argue for the last 70 years.
Right.
You know, we could argue for the last 200 years. The things that need to be addressed and haven't been. And as somebody who's a labor person, you know, the fact that our labor law is so badly screwed up and, you know, 1947 forward, we've created out of whole cloth this idiotic right to work nonsense.
Right.
Is something that has to be addressed. And I don't know that Biden's going to do that. He says he supports the PRO Act, which we'll see. But, you know, we've got a lot of work to do in a very short period of time. But my fear is that we're so deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much chaos that's been created. There's so much destruction in the wake of this Trump storm.
Right.
That we don't get any of that positive stuff done before the midterm elections. And it's a slaughter because people's lives don't get better.
Right. And I definitely think that's what the Republicans want. You know, even I think all of the actions that they're taking at this point, they know, okay, yes, there's a possibility that this is going to backfire and that we're going to lose seats. But in many ways, I think they love nothing more than being in the minority and being able to be the fly in the ointment all the time.
Right.
And to use the media to their advantage, right, and to flip everything on its head. Like, nobody's talked about the trillions of you know, dollars of debt that's been added to the deficit.
I have.
Nobody's talking about any of that right now, right? But then the second, if Joe wins, that's going to be the number one issue. Well, oh, we can't fix this. Oh, the stimulus can't be this big. Or, oh, the jobs bill and the infrastructure bill can't be this big because look at how much debt we're in.
Right. And this is where, as I said earlier, I'm hoping that the Democrats, if we do give them the keys to the steamroller, that they actually take it for a spin. They can get some mud on the tracks, you know, ding it up a little bit. Actually, I don't know, use it instead of just admire it and look how shiny and pretty it is in the driveway.
Yeah, and I think that starts with basically giving up on trying to play fair against people who don't play fair. The idea that you can maintain this comedy, this civility, and a rule book when the people that you're playing against don't even have a rule book. They've lit it on fire, and that's it. And that's not to say that, you know, we have to become, you know, racist and hypocrites and misogynist and all of the ugly things that the Republican Party, you know, has become. But it does mean that you can't just take for granted that they're going to play by the rules and do the right thing. They're not going to do that. The idea that you can shame them and say, oh, you know, it's this many days before an election and, you know, 4 years ago you said you wouldn't do this. They don't give a shit. I mean, you know, it honestly, that's not going to work on them. At this point, you have to actually just say, this is what we're going to do instead, and these are the policies that are going to be better for America, and that's why we're running, and that's why we're taking control of the government.
Right.
And instead of, you know, kind of kowtowing to what the media narrative is going to be, when we already know that the media in many ways is playing to an audience that voted for the disaster. They are not going to be in your corner. I mean, they are playing to this majority white audience that routinely votes Republican, that hasn't voted Democrat since the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And so the idea that you can somehow make it fit in a neat little package with what the Democratic Party represents, that's not going to happen. The Democratic Party is a multicultural coalition. There are so many, marginalized groups that belong to this coalition. And so to try to speak to them in a voice that only plays to the other side is really, I think, neglectful of the people that brought you to the dance.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to move forward on an agenda that makes people's lives better. At the end of the day, it's got to come out that you're making people's lives better.
And
no amount of press should stop you from doing that.
Exactly. And I think they showed signs of that certainly with the impeachment, right? Because if you let the media tell it, that was the worst thing they could have possibly done. And I think that was the first taste we got of them saying, you know what, we're just going to do the right thing, regardless of what the media says in the end. And I think that's paid off for them. I don't think that they've, suffered any consequences because of that. And I certainly think that that's what, in many ways propelled Joe Biden's candidacy. Because the thing that Trump got impeached for was trying to, take down Joe Biden. So ultimately, I think the message from the voters, we have to listen to what this being said in the elections. When the midterm elections came around and we gave that power back to Democrats in the House, that spoke for something.
Yeah.
That meant that we wanted the country to start going in a different direction. And I think we have to just add on to that message next week and, all the rest of this week in early voting to show that this is what the people want. The Republican Party, they're a very loud minority, but ultimately they're still a minority.
But that's basically what Mitch McConnell said, though. He said, we have the power. The voters gave us the ability to do this. They gave us the power to put this through, and we made the choice not to do it back in 2016, and we made the choice to do it because we have control. And he made the argument that I've been making for a while, that if you want to get things done, you got to have the power to do it. You got to have the elected people in the halls of power. You have to have control. And that's why elections matter. That's why you can't ever take a day off, and you've got to continue to push and push and push to maintain that power. Because as soon as you get something, there's somebody there going to take it away.
And, exactly.
And we're seeing that play out right before our very eyes. Sadly, though, and this is where the right has done a much better job than the left. They have bought and paid for a media structure that is second to none. They are destroying the left on social media, on digital strategy. They are so far ahead that I'm concerned still for the future because they have really invested in the means to keep us stupid. And I look at these rallies. I look at these rallies and how is it that, last week we had the most number of new cases that we've had since the beginning of the pandemic for the entire week. The single day had the highest number single day, yet you got thousands of people on a cold, rainy day to go stand outside and listen to the Orange Menace blather on about Sleepy Joe and about Tom Wolfe's a clown and, all this stuff with the masks down under their chin. How do you get the cheering, block him up? How do you get stupid to continue to keep this up?
Well, it's psychological warfare.
Exactly.
It's propaganda. This is why, years ago I was talking about the parallels between what's happening with Trump and what happened with Hitler. And his rise to power and how, again, it didn't start at gas chambers. It started at the media being overtaken, a media monopoly, and propagandizing the citizenry over a period of years. And what we have in America is, honestly, with Fox News, almost 30 years of that, of them pumping their base full of these ideas to where if you tell enough, a lie enough times, you repeat it enough, people will believe it. and there's no amount of facts that you can present to them to change their mindset, because again, they are hardwired for that messaging because it is, you know, littered with white supremacy, and how they want to feel on a day-to-day basis is superior to the people they hate. They want to feel superior to immigrants. They want to feel superior to LGBTQ. They want to feel superior to black and brown people. You know, they want their religion to be the prime religion, a theocracy, if you will. And so all of that messaging that supports that internal belief system that they have, it's an ego boost. And so nobody necessarily wants to, you know, take their own ego down a few notches. And I think that's why that has been so powerful for them. And it is hard to do that on the other side because, again, you know, you can't put out, I think, a message of hope in many ways that is going to transcend this message of hate on that side when they're so invested in it.
No, you're absolutely right. And they bought the T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And the flag.
And the hat.
Right.
All made in China. While hearing a guy talk about, we love those beautiful words of made in the USA.
But don't you think, I mean, think about that. I mean, I certainly, being a Texan, I mean, there were, I mean, for years, even after he was no longer the president, people were still driving around with GWB decals. But even then, I mean, this is the first time, I think, in, I don't know, ever, that you've seen them just have this paraphernalia associated with a candidate. I don't recall Reagan having that. I don't recall Daddy Bush having that. And certainly G.W. Bush, he had decals, but he didn't have these ginormous flags and all these, you know, testaments that really look like a cult following. Yeah,
but they weren't business people. They didn't have merchandising agents. You know, Trump got into this to make money, if you remember.
Right.
So for me, I got to believe he's got a back end. He's getting a taste of all these flags and all this stuff somewhere. I got to believe he's got some deal with the merchandising.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. But I think, you know, above and beyond, it's that branding that serves as subliminal messaging, and not even really subliminal, right? I mean, it's very overt in the way that they're doing it. And I think, again, it imparts a certain level of confirmation bias where people who believe that, when they see all of the paraphernalia, then, again, they feel bigger than they actually are in actual numbers.
Yeah.
And, again, you know, that's why we have to show up and show out to the tune of millions and millions of millions to defeat him, because I think that's the only, you know, answer for them feeling bigger than they actually are.
Yeah, and it takes real courage to, you know, as a listener pointed out to me, because I had mentioned the photograph of all the Nazis saluting and the one guy with his arms folded. She sent me his name, August Landmesser. It's hard for any of us to be the August Landmesser in a Trump rally.
Yeah, but they'll gladly do it. Did you see the nuns? I don't even know if they were real nuns, but did you see them?
No, I just listened to it. I didn't spend a lot of time watching.
I mean, they actually had women in nun habits sitting behind Trump at the rally, and they had these big MAGA masks on.
Oh, that's priceless. Now I got to go look for that. Thanks for that. I got to hunt that down. Thank you for that. You've now given me more that I have to deal with to check this out. Last question. But here's the thing. The other part of this is, you know, I saw this story out of Utah where they have evidently they now have the mom's code.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen this, which is insane to me. You're so invested in the cult that, you know, mothers have said that, you know, they're not going to tell the schools if their kids have the COVID because they don't want to close the schools down. They're calling it the mom's code. And you go, wait a second, you're literally making all the rest of us sick because you have some twisted ideology that you're going to move us towards herd immunity. And what about those of us who don't want our kids to get sick?
Well, and what about the people who literally, I mean, Utah, they're just now announcing that they're going to have to start rationing care.
Right.
You know, they're going to have to do what Italy was doing, where they were deciding, okay, you're above a certain age, you have this menagerie of health problems, so we're not going to put you on a ventilator, we're just going to let you die, And then we're going to do the most extreme measures on young, healthy people that we think have a higher probability of surviving. So, again, the idea of pro-life is complete BS
right.
for them.
No, we've always known that.
That part has been laid bare. Exactly.
That was never the case.
But, again, these are going to be the same people. The people in the mom code are going to feel some type of way when they personally are impacted. Somebody in their family, their mom, their grandma, their uncle, whoever it is in their family or their, you know, friend circle that is going to go into the hospital and is not going to get care. And then it's going to become a crisis for them. And, again, this is happening all over the Midwest. These people who scoffed at the numbers and thought, no big deal, only black and brown people are going to get it. This is the Chinese virus. White people can't get this. They're getting it now. South Dakota, North Dakota, these places that felt like they were in isolation and they moved out to these rural areas so they could evade the blight, you know, of the urban areas. This has come to their front door, and they don't know how to handle it. They have leaders who are not going to make the right decisions, and they're going to die because of it. And I think they're willing to die for Trump. And, you know, it's like we've been saying this whole time, you can't save people from themselves. And you can't save people who don't want to be saved.
Yeah, you're right. Last question I've got for you. Kush was on Fox and Friends. You know where I'm going. evidently, Kush was on their the son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner said that black people, you know, just they have to want to be successful.
Yeah, and this is they firmly believe that. I mean, this is the white supremacist creed to sit there and to have been born on third base, born into a wealthy family, gotten every break he could possibly get in life. Not blacklisted because his dad is a felon, and has ascended to the White House to make disastrous policy, and, you know, skirt the laws on security clearance, on, you know, nepotism, on money, dark money, I mean, all of that. So, again, he can stand in that place of privilege and talk down on people who he obviously has no real-life experience with. And I think this is, again, this is what plays, this is that idea of, you know, they need to get off of the plantation, they're voting for Democrats, Democrats never would make their lives better, because, again, it's a bait and switch. They don't want you to actually look at the policies and look at where they've taken the black community. We know that Obama cut the black unemployment rate in half, and all Trump has done is double it back up again. Those are the facts on the paper. And so, again, for him to say that out of his mouth, I think is just even more proof that they have absolutely nothing to offer the black community.
Right.
But what they will offer is more bigotry and racism to the white community.
What do you say about the polling
argument?
What do you say about the polling that they're citing that among black men, he's closed the gap from, you know, Biden having a 72-point lead to now just a 57-point lead?
I think it's delusional. I mean, I think it's delusional, and I think it's meant to make black men feel comfortable voting for him. I think he wants to create the illusion that the Democratic Party isn't for you. It's okay to back Trump. Look at Ice Cube. Look at Kanye. Look at all of these people that they've cherry-picked out, and it's more disinformation and misinformation. I'm not surprised that this is what they're doing. I think it's very telling that they're not trying to do this with black women. They know they don't have a shot at working that kind of propaganda with us.
Well, they do have Diamond and Silk, who blocked me on Twitter, so I don't know what they do. So,
I mean, they're a minstrel show. That's all you need to know about them.
it is what it is, but we will see. I can't wait till we're counting down the days.
I know.
We'll talk to you on Election Eve.
All right. I'll prepare.
Good
stuff. Have a great week and be safe.
Thank you so much, our good friend Propane Jane. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.